there's a complicated issue wending its way through the legislative process here in Washington. This past week, the House of Representatives voted 354-72 in support of providing federal disaster aid for houses of worship that were damaged by Superstorm Sandy. Supporters of the bill have spoken movingly about the role these churches, mosques, and synagogues play in these devastated communities hit by the hurricane. So why on earth do Interfaith Alliance and other church-state separation advocates strongly oppose this seemingly kind-hearted effort? We need to give you an explanation about that. And here to help explain what's really at stake here is Ariel Gingold, who serves as Deputy Director for Public Policy at Interfaith Alliance. She's been on the show before. Ariel, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thank you for having me, Weldon.
Well, let's start by summarizing the action that Congress took this past week.
Sure. So in short, the House, as you said, passed a bill that changes existing FEMA policy of not granting direct grants to rebuild their facilities to houses of worship, changed that policy to explicitly state that houses of worship are eligible. The current category of organizations, nonprofit organizations that are eligible for these direct grants are those that provide essential services of a government nature. And so the bill basically says that houses of worship provide those essential services and would be eligible for those grants.
Yeah. Ariel, this same issue came up after Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita along the Gulf Coast region. The same arguments were made. What happened in that situation? Did Congress change anything in those instances?
So after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, Congress did not act to change policies. There were discussions at the administration level, and Bush administration officials said flat out that houses of worship were not and should be eligible. Mm-hmm. I believe that some still got money, but I think it was limited to their social service organizations, yeah, to their soup kitchens, their homeless shelters, et cetera. The other important thing to note here is that houses of worship are already eligible for Small Business Administration loans, and those loans are up to $2 million. So, of course, a loan and a grant are different, mm-hmm, in nature, but they are already eligible for some assistance.
This sounds good. It sounds kind. It, mm-hmm, sounds compassionate.
Though the funding might help them rebuild, it will also set them up in a bad position in terms of their religious freedom, their autonomy, the ability of clergy to be a prophetic voice, to speak, mm-hmm, truth to power. It gets harder to speak truth to power when you're also indebted to that power financially. And it would, in the end, be the wrong thing for these houses of worship. So this is an issue not just of the government not establishing religion, mm-hmm, in this way. It seems a pretty basic violation of the religion clauses of the First Amendment to, right, have Congress, to have the government building houses of worship. Mm-hmm. But it's also for the interests of the religious institutions.
The rationale that supporters of federal aid to storm damaged houses of worship revolve around the civil purposes some of those facilities are used for. Talk a minute about the fact that in most cases, existing policies already allow disaster aid for these kinds of facilities, because I think that's been muddled in the debate, and I think you've already alluded to it to some extent.
Many houses of worship who have social services, soup kitchens, homeless shelters, things of that nature, are already eligible for disaster relief aid for those facilities. Currently, if houses of worship provide these essential government-like services and the facilities in which they provide them, more than 50% of that space is used more than 50% of the time, mm-hmm, to provide that service, then they are eligible for the aid. So this would be taking a section of a house of worship or the soup kitchen that's run in the separate building and saying not only are those eligible, which they are already, but mm-hmm. the entire house of worship up to the cross on the top of the building, the stained glass windows, possibly even the prayer books in the houses of worship. Now those are eligible as well, writ large, which puts FEMA in the position of saying what they will or will not cover, what is or is not religious, etc. And it's also inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent, two cases in particular, that say that not only can you not build and rebuild spaces that are used for religious functions, mm-hmm. even within larger facilities like religious schools or universities, the government can't build chapels, for example, you can't refurbish them because who knows whether the facility used today is more than not for a secular purpose. Who knows in the future if the rec room of the house of worship will be as well.
Put it right down on street level. Does this mean that the people who listen to State of Belief, who really don't identify with any religion, even an atheist listener, they're going to have to fund a program with their tax dollars that may involve the government building steeples on churches, putting bemas in synagogues, putting prayer rugs on the floor in mosques, and maybe even funding stained glass windows. Is that what that means?
That is a definite possibility. That is how this could play out. And beyond that, even people of faith, I, as a Reformed Jew, my tax dollars shouldn't support other religions, houses of worship, even other Jewish sanctuaries. I get to decide which houses of worship I support and how I support them. And that's not what our tax dollars should be spent on.
So why can the people in Congress not understand that?
They're in a tricky situation, I think, in many ways, because so many of their constituents are affected. And this is an issue that is really hitting even the strictest separationists in Congress in a difficult way, because it's a matter of competing principles, caring for the people in their district as well as standing by these principles. Many members of Congress do get that. 72 no votes is significant, especially considering we had 3 days to turn this around mm-hmm. between when the bill was introduced and when it was voted on. It didn't get a hearing. This was pretty fast-tracked. So luckily there are members of Congress who get this, but I think part of the problem is that those on the other side, advocates on the other side who are supporting this policy shift, are billing it as an issue of religious discrimination, as an issue of houses of worship and people of faith are being discriminated against by not being eligible for this funding. And that just isn't the case.
Right.
As I mentioned, there are a whole category of nonprofit organizations that are not eligible for this money. On top of that, what we're talking about here is saying that houses of worship and the services they provide are essential services that are government-like. There are many people, myself included, who would say that what houses of worship do is essential for many communities, for many people. But to say that anything that a house of worship does is government-like is a problem both legally, I think, and philosophically, because even though a house of worship may provide a shelter for people, may provide food, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any that say, any clergy, any people of faith that say they do it to be like government. They do it out of their theological beliefs. They do it
exactly.
out of their religious mission.
Exactly.
So we have some legal problems here, but we also have philosophical religious problems here with the implications for houses of worship for saying that what they're doing is like government.
It passed the House. What's the chance in the Senate?
The future in the Senate seems a bit unclear. There has not been a bill introduced yet. We're figuring out what the timing would be. Mostly the path forward seems unclear. The rules in the Senate are different. Vote processes are different. So we're talking to allies in the Senate. We're trying mm-hmm. to get a sense of what the future would be. But hopefully this will not move forward.
So if it didn't move forward, it would just die?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Unless there's some sort of action from the administration, or unless FEMA changes their policy, which all indications have been that FEMA, who would have to administer these policy changes, are not eager to make these changes and do understand the implications for any kind of policy shift in this way.
Tell us about what you as a policy person at the Interfaith Alliance is doing to bring an understanding of the risk of the case for federal funding to houses of worship.
Great. So we met extensively with and spoke over the phone with members of Congress's staff about the implications for religious freedom. And we're really trying to focus in these conversations with the House, with Senate, on the harm to religion. We've also had many, many members of Interfaith Alliance, hundreds and hundreds of members, write to their elected officials, also conveying this message. We sent a letter to the whole House last week. Mm-hmm. We're prepared to send one up to the Senate when the time comes. And we're really trying to get folks in the Northeast who are affected by the impact of Superstorm Sandy to weigh in as well. Some have already done so. Reverend Mark Lukens, a clergy member in New York who also is a leader of an Interfaith Alliance affiliate mm-hmm. up there, spoke very eloquently in NPR about the harm to him as a clergy member and to his church by taking any federal aid. So we're trying to really spread that message.
Ariel Gingold is Deputy Director for Public Policy at Interfaith Alliance. And I want to thank her for briefing us today on State of Belief Radio. I also want to encourage you, if you want to know more about this issue and what's being done on it, to write to Ariel at Interfaith Alliance.
You could reach me by emailing me at policy@interfaithalliance.org. And I do hope, especially if you're in the Northeast, we'd love to hear from you on this issue. So thank you for having me.